I'm sitting in a glass conference room with my hands folded neatly in front of me, the way you're taught to sit when you don't want to look defensive. Across the table are two people from HR and one from legal. No one raises their voice. No one looks uncomfortable. It's calm enough that I almost forget why my throat feels tight. This is the final version, the HR manager says, sliding a document toward me. The title is Termination for Cause. For a moment, I assume it's procedural language, a classification, something that sounds worse than it is. I've worked in compliance long enough to know how dramatic phrasing can be. Then I read the first line. Failure to meet documented role expectations, resulting in reputational risk. Documented. Legal explains that the decision is based on patterns, accumulated concerns, recorded resistance to structure. His tone is kind, almost apologetic, like he's delivering weather. I ask where my director is. He provided written input, HR says. He won't be joining us today. A pen is placed carefully at the edge of the table, not touching me. They tell me I don't have to agree with the document, only acknowledge receipt. Receipt. I look at my name already typed beneath employee signature and understand with a strange calm that nothing violent happened here. Just paper. Just tone. Just records I helped create. I didn't think of myself as vulnerable to manipulation because I trusted systems. Not blindly, professionally. I believed in process, documentation, restraint. I believed that if you behaved properly, the structure would protect you. At Hawthorne and Lyle, that belief felt justified. The firm was conservative in the Canadian way, measured, polite, allergic to spectacle. People didn't threaten, they scheduled. They didn't accuse, they flagged. Damage arrived wrapped in neutral language and calendar invites. I worked in compliance as a project coordinator. Mid-level, dependable. The kind of role designed to absorb responsibility without authority. I liked it because it was precise. Rules existed. If something went wrong, there was usually a place to point. When Graham joined as director of operations, I felt relieved. He spoke softly, asked thoughtful questions, and never wasted words. He didn't disrupt the culture. He refined it. You're carrying risk without protection, he told me during our first one-on-one. That's not fair to you. That sentence felt like advocacy. He proposed formalizing my role. Not expanding it, he said. Clarifying it. Clear scope. Clear expectations. Less ambiguity. 2 days later, HR sent a revised job description and a temporary performance framework. The language was careful, almost flattering. It described outcomes I was already informally supporting, framed as official responsibilities. I noticed the shift, but didn't name it. Lines like ensure stakeholder satisfaction and maintain proactive resolution of escalations sounded reasonable in isolation. They weren't lies, they were just wide. I asked one question by email, politely, carefully, about the scope of stakeholder expectations. Graham replied quickly, broad, but you're already doing it. This just recognizes your capability. Capability felt like trust. Trust felt earned. HR followed up. Please acknowledge receipt, so we can proceed. Proceed where? I didn't ask. I told myself acknowledgement wasn't agreement, that documentation was protection, that clarity prevented abuse. So I clicked. That's the part I keep returning to. Not because it was dramatic, but because it was so ordinary. No pressure. No threat. Just a system inviting me to participate in my own containment. And I did. Because everything about it felt proper. After the acknowledgement, nothing changed all at once. That was what made it easy to stay calm. The work didn't suddenly double. No one raised expectations out loud. Instead, things narrowed. Requests started arriving already framed as conclusions. Maya to confirm, Graham would write in meeting notes. Maya to ensure alignment. Maya to close the loop. They weren't assignments so much as assumptions. No one asked whether I had the authority to do those things. The language implied that authority had already been established somewhere official, somewhere documented. When a vendor missed a milestone, Graham forwarded the email to me with a single line, "Can you manage this?" I replied carefully, outlining compliance constraints, escalation paths, risks. He didn't answer in writing. He called. "We don't need to formalize everything," he said gently. "Use judgment." Judgment sounded empowering. What it meant in practice was that nothing I did could ever be traced back to a directive. Soon, I was mediating conversations I didn't control, smoothing tensions I didn't create, absorbing dissatisfaction that belonged to people above me. I kept things moving because stopping them would have required permission, and permission required documentation. "Documentation," Graham told me, "created friction." "I want to protect you from that," he said during our weekly check-in. "You don't want your name associated with conflict." The check-ins were new. 30 minutes, Mondays, always labeled performance framework review. Graham brought a printed sheet each time. Not a form exactly, more like a rubric. Categories, descriptors, small boxes. Ownership. Dot. Responsiveness. Stakeholder confidence. He'd mark them quietly, explaining as he went. "This isn't punitive," he'd say. "It's developmental." I asked once whether HR saw these. He smiled. "Only if they need to. Right now, this is just between us." That reassurance mattered more than it should have. It made the meetings feel safe, contained, almost confidential. The problem was that the standards kept shifting without ever being rewritten. Ownership began to mean outcomes, not effort. Responsiveness began to mean availability outside my role. Stakeholder confidence became my responsibility, even when decisions were made without me. When I pushed back, carefully, politely, I was told I was being rigid. "You're very process-oriented," Graham said once, like it was an observation, not a warning. "Sometimes you need to trust the intent." Trust the intent. Avoid the paper trail. Be flexible. I complied because each request, taken alone, sounded reasonable. Because nothing felt like abuse when it arrived as concern. Because the language stayed calm, even as the ground shifted. By the fourth check-in, the rubric looked different. Same categories, new wording. Ownership became accountability. Responsiveness became urgency. Stakeholder confidence became trust recovery. Recovery implied damage. Urgency implied failure. But no one told me what I'd failed at. I noticed my name appearing in more emails, in threads I hadn't started, in summaries that framed issues as resolved because I was now involved. I was becoming the visible point of contact for invisible decisions. Still, I told myself this was growth, that responsibility always feels heavier before it feels earned, that if I stayed precise, stayed calm, stayed proper, the system would eventually recognize the imbalance. What I didn't see yet was that imbalance was the design. And I was being trained, gently and professionally, to hold it without complaint. The email from HR arrived mid-morning, tucked between two vendor updates and a calendar reminder. The subject line was neutral enough to ignore. Documentation follow-up. Action required. I opened it because that's what I do. I don't let things sit. Inside was a single sentence and an attachment. "Please review the attached performance improvement plan and acknowledge receipt so we can proceed." Proceed again. That word had started to feel directional, like something with momentum I couldn't step out of. The document opened cleanly. My name, my employee number, my department. No errors. That almost mattered more than if there had been one. The language was calm, careful, familiar. It listed areas for development that looked suspiciously like Graham's rubric, translated into firmer nouns. Ownership gaps, communication lapses, inconsistent follow-through resulting in reputational exposure. Reputational exposure, to whom, it didn't say. One line stopped me. Demonstrated resistance to corrective structure. Resistance. I read it twice, trying to locate the incident it referred to. There were no dates. No emails, no examples, just a pattern described as fact. I forwarded the document to Graham with a single sentence. "Is this a mistake?" He called within minutes. His voice was calm, practiced. I was hoping we'd talk before you reacted.
Reacted to what? I asked. My tone stayed even. That felt important, like evidence.
This isn't disciplinary, he said. It's support. HR just formalizes what we've been discussing.
What exactly have we been discussing? I asked.
There was a pause, not silence, but the sound of someone choosing phrasing. Recurring issues, he said. You know, we've reviewed them.
I asked for specifics.
He didn't refuse. He reframed.
Maya, you work in compliance. You understand how patterns matter more than incidents.
That was true. And he knew it.
I asked whether the weekly check-ins were now part of my file. They weren't at the time, he said.
But when concerns persist, documentation has to reflect reality.
Reflect reality, as if the document were a mirror instead of a construction. I went back to the attachment and read the action plan. It demanded outcomes I didn't control, restore stakeholder trust, prevent future escalations, ensure cross-departmental compliance. Each item ended with the same phrase, employ to demonstrate improvement.
Demonstrate to whom, by when, using what authority.
At the bottom was the acknowledgement line, not agreement, receipt.
I emailed HR asking for supporting documentation. They replied politely, acknowledgement does not indicate agreement. It confirms receipt and understanding of expectations.
Understanding, another soft trap.
That afternoon, a meeting invite appeared. Pip, introduction, HR, Graham, me.
The agenda was attached.
Under objective, it read, align employee performance with documented role expectations.
Documented. I realized then that the document wasn't accusing me of failure. It was redefining success after the fact and placing me permanently behind it.
Everything was calm, professional, proper.
And I was being given the chance, generously, formally, to fail my way out.